This is the Extensive Reading Podcast, where we take an intensive look at extensive reading. This is Jose Camino, and with me is Travis Best.
Hello. This is the 25th episode?
Apparently.
Wow. Quarter of a way to 100.
An eighth of 200?
A 16. No.
Yeah, we're being too ambitious today. But yeah.
What do we? Well, we've got a kind of an interesting episode for you today, a bit of a segment show.
It's a topic based program, basically. We're going to dedicate today's episode to research, future research into extensive reading, and different avenues to conduct research.
Yeah, so this kind of goes back to a few episodes ago. We spoke with Rob Waring for a long time.
He was very generous.
Yeah. We cut that into two episodes, and then we still had extra material where he just started listing off all these different areas that haven't been researched yet, and we didn't really have a good way to fit that into either of those previous episodes, and we felt like, oh, maybe this idea deserves its own episode, and so that's what we've done.
Yeah, I had this idea to find somebody else to discuss further avenues of research. And
we thought, who better than another friend of the podcast, Tom Robb?
And so he agreed to do that, and we're very grateful, and that's what we have for today.
So you'll listen to two segments here. The first, that final part of our interview with Rob Waring, and then the second part where I sat down with Tom Robb. So. I would like to also talk about what you see as the future of extensive reading. I know we covered just briefly about how the government here in Japan doesn't really maybe have the money to fully support a library.
But it has the money, but not the willingness. It doesn't want to put the money into education. Yeah.
Do you see that changing, or do you see like technology?
I think the solution is technological. So I think the way to get the reading material in front of students, I mean, the obvious solution is digital, how digital library students are signed up. But then you've got all kinds of issues of, you know, having the devices in the classrooms, so you've got to have the devices. Now, they may think it's cheaper to buy, you know, 30 iPads than it is to build a library. But then the 30 iPads need to go from class to class. You need to structure your... You're not going to have an iPad for every single student in Japan, right? Now, they did try that in Japan. They tried it in Turkey. Every student got one of these things. But, of course, the technology is out of date within 3 to 4 years.
That's right.
So you've got a big problem. That's why a library is useful of physical books. It's actually cheaper in many ways than digital stuff because you don't need the technology. You don't need the downtime. I lost my password. What was the address again? Or the teacher, I've lost my da-da-da-da-da. And kids, they like the tactile side of actually holding a book. Now, some love the digital, which is fine. But in honesty, in the last 10 to 15 years in Asia, there's been a small but significant increase in dyslexia, eye issues, dysgraphia, and various other reading disorders in Asia in the last few years. And one suspicion of that is that kids are having too many screens, because they not only have the screens at school, they've got, you talk to my kids, 2-3 hours a night on their phones. And this is the same focal distance. It's that same, you know, 12 inches or so. And your eye focus is that same distance all the time at school and home. And that's going to affect their brains quite a lot. So I think we need to limit what they're doing. But I do think the easy solution for the government is a digital one. But paper will be better long term. I think having a physical library where they can check things in and check things out is, I think, still the way to go. It's still better to have that multi-sensory approach where you've physically got something you've got with you rather than just switch on a device, because you can take it home with you. You can't take your iPad home with you.
Yeah. What do you see?
So that's where I think we're going to go.
The future of research in ER, I think, maybe for some of our listeners
who are doing ER, who want to continue to contribute?
I'd say we're only 2-3% into the research that we need to know. That's how far we are, wow. I think, at the moment. I still think there's so much more that we need to know. We know some basics. We know roughly how frequently certain words occur. We know what types of words students would like to meet, but we don't really know which words students know. One of the things that I'm working on right now, there's a website I have called ercentral.com. It's a plug for you. It's a free website. It doesn't cost anybody any money. So what Charlie Brown and I are doing is we have all these reading texts out there, and we are able to track which words students are reading, which words they are looking at. And so all the words in the text can be clicked to look for a definition. And we've tagged the text with the correct definition. So that if the student comes up with, you know, they went to the river bank, it's not going to come up bank financial. It'll come up with bank as inside of a river. So we can track that. Now, what that allows us to do is to see which meaning senses, rather than which words, which meaning senses students are clicking on and not clicking on. If they don't click on it, we can assume that meaning sense is known. That allows us to build up this portfolio, this profile of which words and which meaning senses, not just words, which meaning senses students know by first language, by age. And that then helps us to write texts much more tuned into that, because with a corpus, basically a corpus approach is it's a frequency list based off what somebody has already said, and often a native speaker, which isn't necessarily the language which what students know. So what they approach a graded reader with might not be the same frequency at which native speakers use language. So there's a disconnect there. So we're trying to gather knowledge on finding out which words students know. We can then, once we know this, and we're about 2 to 3 years into this project, we're still a long way off finding out. When we've got this knowledge, we'll be able to write materials knowing that a typical 12-year-old Korean student is likely to know this word and not likely to know this one. We can put them in at the right time, the right graded readers, to make learning so much more effective. That's sort of one of the big projects I'm working on right now. And unless we move to a more semantic model of writing text rather than an intuitive model we have right now, I think we're going to limit ourselves. We need to move away from what we're currently doing eventually. It's a lot harder to write, but it's a wonderful challenge. I'm looking forward to it. But in terms of research, if you don't mind, I'd just like to have a quick list that I made. This is something that I made in the year 2000, and we still haven't got to hardly any of this. This is part of an article I wrote in October 2000 on my webpage. So what are the essential features that allow reading to be called extensive reading? We've been working on that recently, a little bit with Stuart McLean and others, what a definition of extensive reading. We're still not clear of that. How do learners from different language groups or ability levels benefit from ER? Do they benefit differently at different levels? Mm. Can all learners benefit from extensive reading? Some may be able to, some may not. Some have a preference not to do extensive reading. They may be able to learn in a different way from reading than other students. I think there's different approaches to reading. So like reading style, if you will. We've done no research on reading style. When's the optimum time to introduce extensive reading to the curriculum? Again, no idea. What are the minimum linguistic requirements for students to read extensively? What's the best way to prepare learners for reading extensively? How do ER gains compare with those from other, what we might call rich forms of input? What types of reading strategy training can have an effect on ER ability, which don't? How long should those strategy trainings take effect? Here we're talking about phonics. So how much phonics do you need before you move on to decodable text, before you then move on to extensive reading text? What's an optimum relationship between intensive and extensive reading and reading strategy instruction for learners of different L1s and different abilities? Now, that's a massive one. What we do find in research sometimes is you have people asking questions like, you know, do we learn more vocabulary from intensive language study or do we learn more vocabulary from graded reading? And you get these questions all the time. There's lots of them out there. And to me, that's just complete non sequitur. It's a question really badly formed. Because intentional language learning has a completely different goal from extensive reading. Extensive reading is about fluency, working with what you already know. So naturally, you're not going to learn much new stuff from McClendon Union, because that's not what you're trying to do. You're trying to deepen what you already know. So if you try to compare intensive language study of new stuff with the deepening of stuff you already know, of course you're not going to pick up much new language from extensive reading. But you get these pieces of research that come out and say, well, you learn 10 times more vocabulary from intensive reading than you did from extensive reading. Therefore, let's cancel extensive reading. It's like, what? It's like horses for courses, you know? We've got to make sure that we understand which models we're working with. So when people do these false comparisons, it's a kind of straw man argument in many ways. I think we need to be much more careful about what's the right balance between intensive language instruction around an extensive reading. So other things are, what stages in the acquisition process do learners most benefit from extensive reading? What volume of text is necessary for gains to take place at different ability levels? This is something I've been working on for a while. What are the different effects on learners of ER text at I+1, I-1, I+2, I+3? How does this change with proficiency level? Can higher ability learners deal with more words they don't know? Is this consistent for all learners and across all texts? Do different types of gains occur at I-1, I, or I+1, I+2? Are there different types of words being learned? Is it collocations or colligations? What kind of noticing is going on? What's the optimum comprehension level for most gains to take place? No research on that. What is the optimum reading speed for gains to take place? Very little research on that. Optimum level of I for developing reading speed. Which features of an L2 are more readily picked up through extensive reading than other methods? Is there an acquisition order for the language can most learn from ER? And I've got about another 30 questions there. So when I said we're about 1-2% down the road, that's what I mean. We've still got a heck of a long way to go. And when we look at extensive listening, we've got about hundredths of what we know about extensive reading, we know about extensive listening. Anybody out there who's interested in doing a PhD, please get into extensive listening. There is so much we don't know. We don't even know how many repetitions through listening you need to listen to a word before you can pick it up. We have no real clear idea about that. Yeah. So there's so much out there. Please get in contact with me. I have a long list of questions for you.
Okay.
Good. That's exactly what I wanted to hear.
Well, I've got some more.
You said you have a link to that on your website, that article?
Yes, on my website, robwaring.org. If you go to presentations, there's an article, October 2000, that's called For Comment Only, Do Not Cite. And I think it was a critique of extensive reading research.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at the end of there. These are just some of the ones. And also on the ercentral.com teachers tab, you'll find some questions in the extensive listening section. I think in the ER research section, there's some more questions there. There's just so much needs to be done. We're getting more and more all the time. So the ER Foundation has now a bibliography of over 600 pieces of research, but you know, pales into insignificance what they know in other areas of ELT and to psychology and to various other things. We're not really cross-disciplinary enough. We don't really look at cognition so much and psychology so much. But we do know quite a bit about motivation. We do know how, you know, motivation can affect language learning, but it doesn't affect everybody in the same way. We really need to have a good look at the types of text that students got, what motivates them, what doesn't motivate them, what is it about the features of graded readers, which they may not like, and what are the features of native text that are attractive that we can bring in to make graded readers look more attractive? Because graded readers look like a series, it looks like study. Right. So there's some limits we've got there. There's lots and lots and lots more questions we can ask.
Thanks for that.
Good.
Mm.
I think we'll stop there. Thank you, Rob. Rob Waring.
Yeah, thanks to the listeners too. I guess that was a bit fast-paced.
Yeah, he ran through those really quickly. If you haven't gone back and listened, I encourage you to do it again. Some podcast applications have a feature where you can play it at half speed. You might sound a little inebriated.
That's nice. We might.
It's pretty entertaining, but that might be helpful. That was from an article that he mentioned, And Jose, I believe you found that article.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, it wasn't too hard to find, although a little bit hard, I have to say. but it's on that website that Professor Waring mentioned, robwaring.org. And I'll just leave the link
in our show notes. Great.
So, yeah, it's of course, it's a more complete version and more exhaustive.
Yeah, good. So, like I mentioned earlier, we also talked with Tom Robb. And so what you'll be hearing next, I sat down with him. We met up at Kyoto Sangyo University. They were so kind to let us use the recording studio there. And so what you'll hear is a little conversation I had with him.
Yeah, with a completely different perspective,
yeah.
Which is very nice and refreshing. Yeah.
Anyway, well, I appreciate you coming and spending some time with me here.
Oh, not at all.
Even though Jose isn't with us.
Well,
he's missing. But as we said in our email, we just kind of want to give listeners who are interested in doing any extensive reading research kind of a direction in which they can kind of platform and jump off. And we thought Tom Robb would be a perfect person to talk to.
Yeah, well...
So what do you see as the future of extensive reading research?
I
think that can go a
Rob
lot of directions.
Said, I've listened to what Rob said, and he had a long list there of different directions, and I agree with him. And those are all important points. His points, however, very often are focused on, not all of them, are focused on how we can make the ideal graded reader that, you know, we'll do what we want it to. And so what are the student variables that the students, how am I want to say this? What are the student variables that go into making a graded reader that students will like? And are more successful than others. Mm. But at any rate, I have some other things that I'm interested in which do require some research. For example, when students are doing extensive reading, it's more than just seeing multiple instances of the same vocabulary and same grammar. All that basically is the whole concept of spaced repetition, except it's more random than planned when you see the same words or grammar in the book. But it also is, I believe, not just improving their ability to understand, but also to predict what is coming next when they're listening or reading, because it's building up a deeper knowledge of the language itself and how it really works.
So through recognizing collocations and things like that?
Well, not just collocations. Well, just for example, after you hear a verb, you know there's going to be an object coming.
Sure.
You know, and that's not the same in other languages. Mm. It's the idea of when you're reading an article in a newspaper or something, you get to the end of the column, a native speaker knows what's going to be coming next, generally speaking, and often the exact words are going to be at the top of the next column. Students don't have that ability. It's something that you build up slowly as you become more and more familiar with the language.
So even like forms of genre, could you consider that too?
Well, yes, of course. The more familiar you are with a specific genre, the more you're going to be able to predict things. But one thing that was surprising to me, when I was doing the research I have done so far, but not published, is that the improvement in the TOEFL. The TOEFL has three components, right? There's listening, structure, and reading.
Mm-hmm.
The number of words that students have read correlates most highly with the listening component of the TOEFL, not
the
reading.
That's,
right.
That's
there isn't all that great a correlation with the reading.
Hmm.
And that is because it does help improve how much they can understand because their predictive ability, I assume, has to be proven yet, is helping them to understand what is going on. It doesn't correlate that well with the reading for a number of reasons. One being that they are taking a test that's academic reading, which has a lot of difficult vocabulary, whereas extensive reading has easy vocabulary in its more general English, not academic English.
Yeah.
So it's a very different genre of English that they're being tested on with the TOEFL reading, which is one reason why I think it doesn't correlate that well. So at any rate, I'm interested to see what it is that's really happening when students do extensive reading. It's not just learning vocabulary or grammar. It's, you know, making the whole language their own by becoming much more familiar with the entire system of the language.
Yeah, it's getting to know a language, not just a specific aspect of it, right?
Right, right. And another thing is it really graded readers that are best for students or not? I mean, besides graded readers, a lot of teachers, schools in Japan are using what I call youth readers. Okay, it's material that was made for native speaking
children
youth, or teenagers, young adults. That can be subdivided into what's called leveled readers, which are series where it does go step one, two, three, and four, you know, for elementary kids, like Step Into Reading, I Can Read. There are a couple more series like that. But then there are just books that students read for fun, like Magic Treehouse, for example, is one series that a lot of students like, and it's actually very popular in Japan. There's Japanese translation to it, which is one reason why Japanese students might like to read Magic Treehouse in English, because they've already read them. And even if I don't think they're considering it cheating. It's just that they have a background knowledge about the story already, and that helps them read it in
English. I've done that. I've read stories. I think I was reading The Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe in Japanese some years ago, and just having that knowledge of how the plot develops was really helpful.
Mm.
It was still a little too high for where I was, but more of reading pain than...
Well, I think it generally is a good approach to reading if you try to read the same story at different levels. Mm. Like if you take the classics... almost every publisher under the sun has, you know, Tom Sawyer or any of the other classics, because, of course, they're copyright free.
Yeah.
So you can take a classic at level one and then read it at level two, level three, and other ones, and it slowly gets more difficult. But
you still have the background knowledge.
You have more and more background knowledge, so it slowly allows you to, you know, read more difficult material.
I never considered that.
Yeah, it's a good idea, but unfortunately, it's hard to do in a classroom situation because students very often will just read the easiest one and take the quiz, say, multiple times for the other one. So, but for someone who is really motivated, I think that is
really... It
might
be a hard pitch, too. Let's read this book again in a higher level. And
right,
they might lose motivation if it's not the right story.
It has to be a story that's... You know, each individual would like.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, it couldn't be done, I think, as a class. But it has to be done with students who really would honestly read the book again.
Mm-hmm.
We have the same problem, actually, with extensive listening, in that extensive listening is also a valid way of improving your language ability. But students will read the book rather than listen to it because it's easier. For them to do.
Yeah, Rob Waring's, he put out a call. He said, if anybody wants to do a PhD, do it in extensive listening.
Definitely.
And my ears perked to that. I don't know if I'm ready to do a PhD, or if ever, but I was curious when he said that.
Well, it'd be very difficult to assess compared
right?
to
That's
reading.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. There aren't very many tests for listening that you could apply to show that the students have improved. For example, as I said, the TOEFL, type of listening probably isn't what you want. You want something that's similar to the type of listening they've actually been practicing with. And then ascertaining that they really have been listening. I like to study Chinese when I have some free time. And I find actually that just pure listening, where I have headphones on and listening to something, really doesn't work for me.
Mm.
But listening to a video, a YouTube or wherever, whatever, when I have the subscripts there, actually is very, very helpful, helpful, especially the subscripts have both the Chinese characters and then the pinyin, the pronunciation. I find that really interesting, and I can follow it very well, whereas I couldn't if I was just listening alone. But no one has done any study of that, and it would be rather difficult, I think, to design a study where you could, you know, find out if that really works. And then can you really find students that would faithfully do what you want them to
do?
That's an issue.
That's a real trick.
But, yeah, for the motivated individual, I think extensive listening is really great. And it would be nice if someone found a way to actually get that into the classroom or with classes of students to do, hopefully, as outside work rather than
In the class, absolutely.
Right. Another issue, a very different one, is very often when I go abroad, the people in the country say, well, the people in this country don't read. It's a non-reading culture, you know. And, I mean, it's true. I mean, there are countries where that have very few bookstores. You find that the parents don't read to the children at all. They just aren't fond of books. It's difficult to obtain books. They have their school books. They can read. They can read the Quran, for example, but they don't do any popular reading for pleasure. And this is, you know, the, well, Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates. Is that right? United Arab Emirates, right.
UAE
are two countries where this is true. And there are other instances of that around the world. Malaysia, Indonesia are like that to some extent. Indonesia perhaps more than Malaysia. And so this makes it difficult to do extensive reading because they're very reluctant to read. It's not a habit. In fact, someone told me when I was in the UAE that they're actually embarrassed to read. They're made fun of.
Wow.
If they're caught reading, you know, it's not something you do in public. And you can't even do it at home that well because the family expects you to be with the rest of the family watching TV or talking or whatever. You know, it's an oral sort of tradition.
Interacting. And I guess reading by yourself isn't necessarily interacting with somebody, right?
Right. But no one has done any measurement, to my knowledge, on how much any specific culture is a reading culture. And it's not just a yes, no, or a scale because there are all sorts of sub-factors. I mean, like, do they read at home? How many bookstores are there available? There are all so many factors you could probably factor into research into what does it mean to be a non-reading culture and what sort of effect does it have on the ability to promote extensive reading.
Do you think language, like an L1, has any effect on I don't know, being a reading culture or the benefits of doing extensive reading in English? Do you think, I mean, of course, in language learning, there's L1 interference, but do you think that?
Well, I don't think that's an issue, really, because, I mean, say, even in the Arab-speaking world, Egyptians are a reading culture, okay? So it has nothing really to do
with the language
or the writing system. It's just that that's their tradition.
It's cultural values.
So, of course, one thing that is connected is how many cognates are with English and your L1. And so in Europe, extensive reading really isn't all that popular, at least in the Western part of Europe. Probably because they find that they can actually struggle through a book in English, you know, without needing a graded reader.
Sure.
I mean, after all, you can understand a lot of language if you just recognize the words. Forget the syntax. Just your ability to logically figure out what it must say if these are the words will get you along to
pretty close,
to some extent. So, I'm not sure how much of a future extensive reading has in Europe because of the proximity of the culture. Of course, you can say even in Japan, since there are so many katakana words from English in Japanese these days, that probably there are a lot of so-called cognates there too.
Yeah, I don't know if it does them any favors.
But, of course, they're very often used in different
ways, different
meanings and so forth. But that's, again, something which I don't think anyone has really studied. But my bet is if you take, say, the first 2,000 words of English, you can find that over 50% of them have some usage somewhere in Japanese language. Mm. It might be in a special area of, you know, a genre of Japanese, but I think there's a lot of commonality there these days. Another issue is how do you motivate reluctant readers?
Yeah.
You know,
That's huge.
And we found that in the Middle East, for example, competition is an important factor in getting a class to read. They are very competitive. Mm. And here in Japan, we usually assign grades for how much extensive reading they've done. And so if you read more, you get a higher grade. It turns out in the UAE, the syllabus is set up so that the teacher has control of only a very small percent, 5% in one instance, I found out, of the final grade of the students. So there's no way that they can put any teeth into their into the assignment, say, okay, I'm going to fail you if you don't do the extensive reading. But still, they're doing a lot of extensive reading. And, of course, part of it is once they start doing it, they find out they enjoy it. Mm. Some of the students do. There are some that will never enjoy it. But the competition actually has played an important part. And, again, that might be truer in some cultures than other. I'm not sure how much the competition would come into play here.
Yeah.
But
just so show like completion rates and number of books read and then
right. Well, say in M-Reader we have mm-hmm. a leaderboard and yeah. so forth for those purposes. But there they'll actually make a leaderboard showing for each class who is the leader and paste it, put it on the wall of mm-hmm. the library or whatever, because that really means something to them if they make it up to number one place 1 week. But I'm not sure if it would have that much of an effect here. So. We could look into what is the best way to motivate learners to read in various cultures.
If it's America, it's pizza parties, right? That's what we did. I was thinking elementary school.
Oh,
like,
right. Well,
it was
I'd like to
somebody,
help with that research.
You read like so many books, you put stickers on the board and then, 30 books of pizza.
Mm, mm.
Spoke to my heart.
Another issue is the genre of the books themselves. Basically, we have fiction and nonfiction, right? And the fiction can be any type of story
sure,
or whatever.
Sure.
And increasingly, there's more nonfiction available. There's biographies, and then there's a lot of geographically based information or science technology based books. And which of these are more effective for extensive reading? Mm. Obviously, if you're into science or technology, then you'd think that those books might be more useful, but the vocabulary is much more restricted, I would suppose, in that type of book. I haven't done a study of it. So how much does it help? Also related to that, most of the students are reading low-level graded readers, mm-hmm. right? Level one, level two, or whatever. I recently did a survey of the responses to our post-quiz questions that the students answer after they finish a book on M-Reader, and I have close to 2 million responses to how much did you like this book,
mm-hmm.
And 4 other questions concerning the books, like how often did you look up words in the dictionary? Did you feel that the level was appropriate? How much could you forget that you were actually reading and so forth? And from the statistics, one thing that was obvious is they've read a lot more of the low-level books. In fact, it's a factor of about 10 to 1. If you take like the Oxford Bookworm series, the number of students who have read what they call it, stage 1 book mm-hmm. compared to those who have read stage 6 books, it's about 2,000 for stage 1, but 200 for stage 6. But the publishers somehow feel that they need to have a full range of books. But really, those upper levels don't sell
or
that much.
Few.
Or they aren't read that much. Probably because most of the time when we're doing extensive reading, it's for 1 year with very basic students. So they never really get up there. But another question is, how effective is extensive reading when you're using a high-level book like that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if the book has 1,000 head words in it, you're going to see any one of those words much more frequently than if you have a 4,000 head word book, right? Because there are so many more words, so you aren't going to hit the same word that often. So from that standpoint, it might not be as effective as a vocabulary building measure.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, basically, extensive reading isn't all that great for building vocabulary. It reinforces the vocabulary
right.
at the lower levels.
Yeah,
but because the books are simplified, you don't get the high level vocabulary
yeah.
that you really need in order to improve your language ability to a level where you could actually use it for, you know, work or whatever. So that's another area where I think it needs to be inspected. We have to look at it a bit more. Let's see. I think I've almost shot my wad on the questions that I had here.
We've hit just about 20 minutes.
But there's a lot of hesitations and things you got out of that.
No.
Let's see.
Well, I think that was really nice. I think anybody who is listening who is interested in some different areas of research has definitely been given some ideas.
Yeah, well, I'll probably think of more things once we're done.
Oh, I should have talked about that, right?
Yeah, so, you know, it basically now is being used just with low-level students, but how far could you push the envelope?
And,
it's mainly used as a forced class activity right now. So that means we only have our students for 1 year, or if they're in a curriculum, because they're English majors, either in a high school curriculum or a university curriculum, then you maybe have them for 2 years. Have them read. But after that, they're on their own. But most of them would prefer not to do extensive reading.
Mm-hmm.
You find maybe 10% of the students who really do like it and will start reading on their own. In fact, another little piece of research I did recently, again, not published yet, is I looked at the correlation of various online activities that the students had done, not just extensive reading through mReader, but, English Central, for example, or apps for improving vocabulary or whatever. And they all contribute to some aspect of improvement in one of the components of the TOEFL score.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one that, say, definitely was useless. But I realized I had no measure of motivation in the data because it was all just actually how much they had done of the various things. So they were all things that were required for the students to do here in the English department at Kyoto Sangyo. But many people did do more than they had to. But then I realized, I do have a measure of motivation. I looked at how much they had used the materials during the vacation time.
Sure.
And the surprising thing was that correlated that was the highest correlation with the improvement in the TOEFL. So this one factor of how much they had done during vacation time.
When they didn't have to.
When they didn't have to do it. So motivation is very
huge.
Important.
Yeah.
And how do we build that motivation is a good question. I'm
good.
Not sure if I have an answer for it.
Engaging stories. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
Perfect. All right, fine.
Thank you to both Tom Robb and Rob Waring.
That was very inspiring, actually. And I really like the fact that they were able to give different perspectives and
different approaches.
There's one thing that I really liked about Tom's approach is that he's interested in the many things students are doing while reading. You know, so it's not just that we should be doing research on how many new words you learn and how much your vocabulary develops or your grammar develops, but there are many other aspects of the language and the way you acquire and learn the language that are going on while you're doing extensive reading,
and
they're worth researching. I like that. I also like very much this notion of looking into the different cultures and how extensive reading can be done in a culture where reading is normal, and as compared to a culture like, as he said, Saudi Arabia or United Arab Emirates, where reading might even be frowned upon.
Yeah, you don't want to be seen out with a book, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's very, like, it's like,
I'd never thought of that.
I never thought it's like being gay in the same countries mentioned.
Being out
might be just as difficult.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think all of this boils down to something that Rob Waring said. Is he said we're about 3% in to extensive reading research, and I think for me and for Jose, and certainly for you listeners, I think that should be a challenge. To up the game. So yep. If you're interested in doing any research, I hope you found some ideas here. Moreover, if you have any ideas that you want to share, that you want to get some opinions on, you could leave us a comment. Or if you want to do your own episode on research of extensive reading, we'd love to hear from you. So shoot us an email.
Yeah, well, not only in research, anything else to do with extensive reading. I have to say, one of the episodes with the most views or listens is the one we had about Chinese, and this was a listener originated
episode. They just shot us an email, and that was great.
So feel free to do the same thing. Send us an email at
exrpodcast@gmail.com, and you can of course find us at our WordPress, which is erpodcast.wordpress.com.
And for our next episode, we'll keep on talking about research, and yet from a different perspective, since we're interviewing Professor Amanda Gillis Furutaka from Kyoto Sangyo University. And she has been doing a lot of qualitative research into extensive reading and related areas. So, I'm sure she will be able to give us some views on what qualitative research can do for extensive reading.
Yeah, really looking forward to that. So, until next time, happy reading.